Joining me on the line are John and Judy Dollarhite, who in April received a letter from the USDA asking for $4 million. John and Judy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Now, of course, they didn't ask for $4 million, but I want to back up a little bit. What happened was that, and I'm getting my information off of some websites, and the first website that broke this story was biggovernment.com. And what happened was you all were trying to teach your young teenage son responsibility and the value of a dollar. So you had rescued a pair of rabbits, one male and one female. And of course, they reproduced. And it got to the point where you knew you couldn't make any money off of selling the rabbits for food. You would lose money. So you decided to sell them as pets. And you sold a few rabbits, but somehow it caught the attention of the U.S. government, who came knocking on your door and did an inspection and then followed up by another inspection. And then in April this year, you got a letter saying that, well, we're going to fine you $90,000 because you violated a law, specifically 9 CFR 2.1, which says that you are not allowed to sell more than $500 worth of, in this case, rabbits, without being licensed. And of course, you contacted the USDA to find out if you needed to be licensed, and they told you, no, you didn't. And so you get the letter. Am I doing good so far?
For the most part. We contacted them initially when we were going to sell them as meat. Our assumption was if you were going to sell something for human consumption, there had to be strict government regulations. To our dismay, they told us they did not regulate meat rabbits. They were deemed poultry, and they were not regulated by USDA, and we did not need a license. At the time, we attended church with a USDA meat inspector, doctor of veterinary medicine. We asked him. We said, this is what we were told. This doesn't sound reasonable or right to us. What's the real story? And he said, well, they told you correctly. He said, I wouldn't recommend it, but if you wanted to take a picnic table and butcher rabbits in your front yard and sell the rabbits for the meat, he said, you would be perfectly legal to do so. He said, I wouldn't recommend it. I would recommend you find a meat packing facility that is USDA inspected and have them do the butchering for you and then sell the rabbits packaged with their weight and the date that it was slaughtered.
And are you all farmers?
That's what we did. Both of us have a farming background. We live on 3 acres just outside of the city limits. You can raise a whole lot of rabbits on 3 acres.
When we first got married, we owned a 90-acre farm and had registered Charley cattle.
Mm-hmm. But we've since moved to town, and we run a business in town. And this was simply, you know how teenagers are, everything is I want, I want. Well, we both earned our money, and we wanted to teach him some responsibility, where food came from, those types of life lessons. And that's really kind of where this began. And we found out very quickly, as did he, that you couldn't make a whole lot of money selling meat rabbits. And right. We were getting requests all the time for the small pit varieties, preferably the ones, the lop ears, the Holland lops, the small lap bunnies. And that's what we moved to for a variety of reasons. There's less feed involved to get them to a market weight. 4 weeks, they're ready to sell. Meat rabbits, it took 12 weeks and a whole lot of feed and labor. So what are you going to do? And the pet rabbits, they were in hot demand. We actually turned a whole lot of folks down. So that's where we went with it. Our error in judgment, I guess, was assuming that if you didn't have to have a license to sell meat for human consumption, why would you need a license to sell a pet rabbit that you set on your lap? And the state of Missouri, according to the Missouri Department of Agriculture, does not require a license to sell pet rabbits or meat rabbits. Their only stipulation for Missouri is if you exceed 1,000 head of meat rabbits in a given year, which we didn't come even remotely close to that, then they want to know about it and want to know under what conditions that they're being slaughtered and processed. So if you sell 999, I guess it's no big deal. 1,001 and it's a problem. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but that's what the state of Missouri told us. We had sold to a pet store as well as Silver Dollar City, which is a local theme park in Branson, Missouri. They have a petting zoo. They also sell the rabbits as pets at that facility. They resold them. Because they are considered an exhibitor, they had to be USDA licensed and inspected.
Right.
Their inspector went over their books, found our invoices, did a little quick math, and determined that we had sold them more than $500 in the calendar year. That's when she knocks on our door in November of 2009. We had no idea we were in any violation of anything, no idea whatsoever. She leaves us no documentation, no badge, no business card, nothing.
That was nice of her.
She was very gruff, not very accommodating, not very informative, very aloof and evasive. Had we known then what we know now, we would have said, if you don't have a warrant, you need to leave. And she would have had to have left.
Right.
That's what we should have done.
Right.
We
didn't
have anything to hide. We didn't know. We didn't have anything to hide. We bred quality rabbits. Our cages were clean. We took great pride in taking care of our stock. I mean, these were not only farm animals to us, they were also our pets. They all had names. They all had personalities. We could tell you each one by name and what their quirks were. It wasn't just something that we threw in and thought about very seldom. We worked really hard and took very good care of the animals. We had downsized considerably by the time she showed up. My father was ill. I had to become his guardian conservator. So we had already downsized greatly by the time she showed up. And we didn't have anything to hide, so I agreed to let her inspect. She
right.
begins the inspection by counting the wire with her thumb. And she tells me that my cage is a quarter of an inch too small. Now, when we purchased these cages, they were commercially built cages that stated they were for rabbits up to 15 plus pounds. We had rabbits that were 2.5, maybe 3 pounds. So they had much more cage space than what really should have been required. They were not too small.
Right.
The next cage she goes to, she sees a rust spot about the size of a pencil eraser or your small fingernail. She said, oh, that would have to be sanded or painted or removed. She moved to the next cage, and a rabbit feeder has a grate in the bottom that allows the chaff to fall from the feed so that it doesn't clump and mold. There was maybe a half teaspoon of chaff that had fallen out from that grate. She said, oh, that would be considered a violation. That would have to be removed immediately. And
oh,
I said, well, the first time they stick their nose in to eat, there's going to be chaff. That's what it's for. So you'd have to remove that immediately. So I knelt down and blew it off, and it was gone. Then she says, how do you clean and sanitize your cages? I told her we power washed them, we removed the stock, dumped all the feed and water, power washed them. If one was to be a little nastier, we might use bleach or detergent, allow them to air dry in the sun, put the stock back in the cages, and refill the water and feed. Uh-huh, she says, and I said, is that not an acceptable practice? No, it's fine. And I said, well, I hear some hesitation in your voice. Well, many commercial rabbit producers, particularly meat rabbit producers, use a blowtorch to burn the manure and the fur from the wire. And I said, I'm going to stop you right there. OSHA standards state you do not burn galvanized wire because it puts off toxic fumes. And I said, second of all, you just told me a tiny spot of rust on a feeder would have to be removed or painted. Yet you're telling me to do a practice that would cause all of my wire to rust. The next thing you would tell me is all that had to be replaced at
right.
about $150 a row plus my labor. And then I'm out. What am I doing with my stock while I'm doing all of that? And I said, is that not the case? She refused to answer. And I said, ma'am, I ask you a direct question. She wouldn't answer. So as we were kind of looking at each other, and she says, so what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to know what the requirements are so that I could even begin to see if this is feasible to come into compliance or not. I said, I need a checklist or a guide booklet as to what the cage size requirements is, what the watering practices are, if there's any indoor, outdoor stipulations, requirements, air conditioning, heat. Well, there's not a list for that. And I said, wait a minute, you just told me my cage was a quarter of an inch too small. Now you're telling me there's no guide list and checklist for that? Which is it? And I had her, and she knew it, and it made her very mad. And
I
said, well, if there's no rule book, then how can anybody follow? Well, it's up to the inspector. It's up to the secretary. And I said, and the secretary is, well, that's me. And I said, so 1 month you tell me to blowtorch my cages, I do that. The next month you come in and tell me the wire's rusty and I have to replace it. So then I replace it, you tell me something else. So it's a constant circle jerk, is that it? And it made her mad, and she wouldn't answer. And she says, well, do you want an application kit or not? And I said, well, you're welcome to leave one with me. I said, we will look it over and discuss it. And I said, we'll do some investigating and call some other offices. She didn't leave me with anything. She didn't have one. She told me she would mail me one.
Mm-hmm.
Never received it. We didn't hear anything from anyone until January of 2010, when an APHIS inspector, his name was Daniel Hutchings.
What does that stand for, Judy?
APHIS, they are the regulatory agency for the Animal Welfare Act. They do the investigations and the inspections. If USDA...
There's a law enforcement end.
Gotcha.
Of
okay.
USDA.
Gotcha.
And so he called and demanded a meeting with us. And I said, if we refuse, he said that would be very unwise. I asked if we needed an attorney present. He assured me I probably did. So we secured an attorney. We scheduled the appointment. We scheduled it at our business. We did not do it at our home where the rabbits were. He arrived. To say that he was unprofessional would be an understatement. He looked like he had worked cattle all weekend or jumped off a boxcar from out of state. He was covered head to toe. His pants were slick with manure. He smelled horribly.
He had a big beard with tobacco stains going out both corners of his mouth.
Long, nasty, unkempt hair, filthy hands, very rude, very aggressive. He entered the meeting stating his name. I'm not here to discuss the law, debate the law, interpret the law, or justify the law. I'm here to conduct an inspection. I will ask the questions you will answer.
Wow.
So as he went along and we would ask a question, he would come across that mantra over and over again. Our attorney asked him, he had given our attorney this pamphlet that was from APHIS, and our attorney stated to him, I'm reading this, and he said, I'm an attorney, and he said, I'm reading it, it's extremely vague. He said, I see why anyone would have difficulty interpreting what the regulations are. There's very little specifics here, and it refers to all this other stuff. Elsewhere, he asked a couple questions. He told him the same thing. I'm not here to interpret, justify, explain, whatever, debate. I'm here to conduct an investigation over and over and over.
God.
So as we got down to the end, this went on for about 2 hours. When we got to the very end, our attorney said, okay, so if these folks just totally get out of the business, will that satisfy USDA? I'm not telling you to do that. I'm not telling you to quit. I'm not telling you to sell. I'm not telling you to continue. I'm not telling you to do anything. I'm conducting an investigation. He said, theoretically, if the dollar hikes got out of the rabbits altogether, would USDA drop the case? He said, well, it would look good to the review board.
Okay.
So we asked him when we would hear from him. He said he would complete his report. We would hear something in 2 to 4 weeks. 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks pass. We hear nothing.
Right.
So John calls out to Colorado Springs. They inform him, oh, your file has been forwarded on to the federal office. You'll need to call out there. He calls the federal office. He speaks with Roxanne Folk. She's one of the USDA spokespeople, reviewers. She said, Mr. Dollarhite, your file is still on my desk. We're still reviewing it. I'm not finished with it. And I will tell you, though, we are going to make an example of you and prosecute you to the fullest extent of the law. And he said, what does that mean? And she says, you'll have to wait for my report, and hangs up the phone.
Nice. The first person that came over, was that November of 2009?
That is correct.
How long was she there? Do you remember?
15 minutes.
So she was just there to point out the little rust stain on the cage and tell you how to clean it up, even though she didn't know what she was talking about. She didn't give you a card, right?
No.
No badge.
No badge. Okay. That's what I was going to ask.
The only thing that she had, the vehicle that she was in, was a Ford Explorer with United States tags on it.
Gone. It was a Chevy Trailblazer.
Okay.
It was an SUV.
It was an SUV.
Right.
U.S. government license tag.
Okay. So that was really the only indication that this person may or may not have been from the government, because she produced no identification.
That is correct.
Did you ask for anything?
I don't remember.
We were so stunned, and we didn't feel like we had anything to hide.
Did you ever have any dealings with the government on the federal level like this before?
Absolutely not.
So probably the most you've ever dealt with law enforcement was like a speeding ticket or something, right?
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. Okay, so this lady was here 15 minutes. This Grizzly Adams guy comes by who had just rolled in a bunch of cow manure, jumped off a train like a hobo or something. And
yeah,
so
correct.
He rolls in. He doesn't give you a card. He doesn't show you any identification,
well,
right?
He did give us a business card.
He gave us a business card, and I do believe he showed our attorney his identification. He did do that.
Okay. So you had his business card before you called Colorado Springs?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. You didn't want to call him back.
We did.
Well, never returned our call.
You called him, you left 4 messages, and he never returned your call.
Right.
That's correct.
And this guy's from the U.S. government.
Yes.
Yes. The APHIS office.
Yeah. And like you said, that's the law enforcement arm of the USDA, similar to like the FBI is the law enforcement arm of the Department of Justice.
That is correct.
Okay, so the secretary you called, she says, we are going to get you to the fullest extent of the law, and she hung up on you. That's where I interrupted you. So go ahead, Judy.
That's right. So we didn't hear any more. That was in approximately April of 2010. Now, mind you, we had already, after we left our meeting with the Daniel Hutchings character from the APHIS office, you know, our attorney says, folks, how important is this to you? And I said, I just want it to go away. And he said, well, I would suggest that, he said, you get rid of your stock. So not wanting to fall into this $500 in a calendar year pigeonhole problem, we traded everything for other livestock items. We
right.
traded for a saddle. We traded for an incubator for eggs, chicken waters, those types of items. We traded our cages. We traded our stock, and we took a loss doing so, but that's what we did.
You bartered.
We bartered.
Yes.
Right.
And we got rid of everything. And she didn't even give my husband a chance to tell her that. She didn't give him time to even say really anything.
Right.
So that was approximately April of 2010. We hear nothing until we get a certified letter from USDA in April of 2011. Stating, based on their investigation, we had sold, I believe it was 619 animals is what they stated between
right.
this date and this date. And the fine for that was $3.9 million, but in good faith, basically, they would give us a settlement of the $90,643 that we could pay with our credit card at pay.gov. And we had until the end of May to do so. So we called our attorney, and he starts laughing, and he says, well, I'm sorry to laugh, but he said, this is unbelievable to me. And I said, well, it's unbelievable to me, and I'm not laughing.
Right.
So he came over and read the letter and digested it, and then we proceeded to decide how to best handle it. He wrote a letter back to them stating he felt that this was extremely out of line and overkill, and on the pamphlet that they had given him at our meeting in January, it stated approximately how many violations that they investigated in a year and what their total amount of revenue, and he just did the math and divided it, and basically each one of those, it came out to something like $272 if you divided it out equally, and he said,
right.
how do we get from that to $90,000 when our best year, and this was the year they were discussing, we sold $4,600 gross sales.
So the best year that you had gross, not net, profit.
Correct.
Right. Gross revenue was $4,600. Is that what you said?
That's
yes.
correct. Once I received this ridiculous notice, I emailed Claire McCaskill's office, Roy Blunt's office, Billy Long's office, telling them what had happened and that if they could help me with this, that we would greatly appreciate it.
You're talking about the two senators from Missouri, right? Blunt and McCaskill?
Yes.
Yes, correct.
And your congressional representative?
It's Billy
yes,
Long.
Yes, Billy Long, yes.
Okay. So you
correct.
Notified all three of those folks?
Yes, I
yes.
did.
Okay, electronically through email.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay. And did you hear back from them?
I heard back from Claire McCaskill's office on Monday. Her right-hand man, Corey Dukes, called me, and he said, Claire's very upset about this. He says, you know, she's a farm girl from Missouri, and she's very upset by this and thinks this is absolutely ridiculous. She's looking into it. She's going to be speaking with USDA, and he said, we will be in contact with you, which her office made several phone calls to me personally. It so happened we had a Tea Party group out of Branson contact us and said, we've heard about your story. We are going to hold a rally in front of the USDA office in Ozark, with or without you, but we would really like you to be there. Well,
okay.
when you're in this position, basically from the advice of our attorney and from other people, any publicity to get the word out is in our favor. So we did go, and we were at this rally. We had about 50 people at this rally in front of the USDA office, and my phone rings. Claire McCaskill had no idea this rally was going on. Her timing could not have been better.
Right.
She calls me personally, and she said, when I read this in the paper, prior to knowing I had an email from you, she said, I thought my head would explode. She said, my very words, do the feds not have anything better to do than this?
Yeah.
And so she said that she had made a call to them and that they were supposed to be working out something that was reasonable. She said, I will continue to follow up and my office will be in contact with you. I thanked her for her call. I asked her if she would mind addressing the crowd. I told her where I was and what we were doing. And she said, I'd be happy to address the crowd, and which she did. So after that, basically her office tells us that we would be hearing from USDA, and it was their understanding, Claire McCaskill's office, that if we allowed USDA to come and inspect our property, if there were no animals, no cages, that they would drop the issue without penalty. We got a letter. They stated they wanted to come do the inspection. They wanted disposition records, meaning they wanted to know precisely who and when and for how much were the animals sold.
Mm-hmm.
We did not operate that way. Dog breeders do. Rabbit breeders are a little bit different. We did not do that. When you sell something on Craigslist, do you get a name and number of someone you sell a toaster to or whatever the item is? You don't.
Right.
You make arrangements, you trade, whatever you're doing, whether it's money or whether it's items, and you go on your merry way. We did that for two reasons. I did not want to throw another breeder under the bus, nor did I want to have any tangible financial money that I was going to have to claim that was going to get me into further trouble with the U.S. government. So that's what we did. We agreed to the inspection. We scheduled it. Our attorney was present. We also had someone come and videotape. We also had the county sheriff come as our representative.
Okay.
They showed up. They brought the highway patrol. They were early. They wanted to go ahead and start the meeting. And I said, no, the meeting's at 3 o'clock and our attorney's on his way. And they wanted to know why we had someone videotaping. And we said, for our records. They did not like that. The videotape lasts approximately 7 minutes. They came. There were no cages. There were no animals. They really didn't even look around the rest of our property. I expected them to at least walk out to our barn. They did not do that. They didn't walk to the back of the property. They looked around at where we told them the rabbits used to reside at our side yard in a shaded area. Well, I guess there's nothing here. We'll write up our report. We don't know how long it'll be until you hear from someone.
These two agents that came were not represented here in Missouri. One was from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the other one was from Fayetteville, Arkansas. So both of these guys were well over 100 miles away that they had to drive to get to our location instead of using a local USDA agents that are here in Missouri. So we thought that seemed a little weird.
We didn't hear anything from them until we received another letter stating that they wanted us to agree to jurisdiction.
Now, the lady that wrote that was Sarah Conant, which is the vice president of the Humane Society of the United States.
Okay.
She's also the person that was responsible for suing the state of Missouri for the Freedom of Information Act to get all the names of the Missouri breeders, and she was instrumental in getting Prop B passed in Missouri.
What was Prop B?
It's known as the puppy mill law, however. It is far more reaching than putting a stop to puppy mills. There is much more legislation in that bill. It was highly misrepresented. The HSUS worked very hard at putting out propaganda-type TV ads, and of course they show the pitiful mangy dog in a filthy cage to pull at the heartstrings of people that don't understand what the bill contains and did not read the entire bill. It was very manipulative politics, and that's what HSUS does for those that donate to the Humane Society. HSUS euthanizes more animals worldwide than any entity. Most of the time, an animal that goes to a Humane Society shelter lasts about 3 days. If it's not adopted, they're euthanized.
Just
to put that out there. So this individual is the one that wrote. She sued the USDA for information, and what do? They create a job for her. She's the individual that wrote the letter, the latest letter, and it basically states they want us to agree to jurisdiction, then they want us to agree that we will not ever own any breeding animals of any kind. It does not state under the Animal Welfare Act, because they regulate certain animals. It states any breeding animal, meaning if we ever moved from here and we wanted to run cattle, we could not. They also put restrictions on our property. There could be no breeding animals on our property ever. So that decreases the value of our real estate should we ever decide to sell. We are zoned agriculture. We have 3 acres. We've fattened a beef. That would prevent us from fattening a beef on our property. We couldn't have a heifer that hadn't been altered, or we would have to have a steer, which we've done. I don't have a problem with that. But they've put in the stipulation, we could not own an interest in any breeding animals. So theoretically, we couldn't hire someone to fatten a beef for us. We couldn't own stock in cattle. We couldn't have cattle at a feedlot. We couldn't do a number of things under this stipulation.
Right.
That is not what their agreement was, and we're not going to sign that.
A lot of the stuff's out there saying that we have refused to the agreement. We did agree to the Claire-McCaskill deal, and we've abided by everything that was within the Claire-McCaskill's deal that she put together. We've totally abided to that. It's the USDA that they changed the rules after the fact. After the inspection, they made up a whole new set of rules, and so we will not agree to the Sarah Conant letter that was sent to us after the inspection that we had agreed. And in my thoughts, our case should be done and over with because we did agree for them to come out and do the inspection and determine that we had no animals, and we did agree that we would not raise rabbits for resale. And so with that issue, we did agree with that. It's the USDA that did not hold up their end of the deal.
Okay. Now, this, of course, is something that I just found out about tonight when you told me that an article in your local paper.
The Springfield News Leader has ran a number of stories, none of which have been accurate. They have been twisted and manipulated. There's another article that appeared in the NICSA Enterprise today.
Mm-hmm.
That is a carbon copy of the Springfield News Leader's letter. Same reporter,
right.
Same article. And I told her personally, you've not reported the facts. You need to stop this. Well, what did I not report accurately? I gave her a laundry list. The
right.
article stopped for a time, but now she started up again. It must be a slow news week. I'm not sure, but she's printed the article stating that we didn't allow the inspection. She didn't bother to get her facts straight.
That's something that happens all the time, Judy.
Very frustrating.
Yeah, it is frustrating.
When the Springfield News Leader called us about a week and a half ago, I was with a customer at our business, and I told her, I said, I can't talk to you this second. I said, if you call my wife's phone, I think maybe he'll give you a comment, but I can't at that moment. I had to attend with my customers that I was working with, and so she did not call my wife. She just took it as that I had a no comment type of attitude, and she wrote a story which was absolutely incorrect. Like Judy was just saying, she made it sound as if we thumbed our nose at the USDA and did not allow them to make this inspection. Well, she didn't even have her facts right. So once this goes out onto the AP, we had local TV stations, and we had a local radio station, and we had other, like Danbury, Connecticut, ran the same story, and Columbus, Ohio, all running incorrect information.
Right.
That she just didn't take the time to even try to, she could have got online, and she could have pulled up.
The inspection is on YouTube.
Why don't you give the listeners that address?
Well, if you just type in my name on YouTube, you'll get about 100,000 hits. If you go to Google,
right.
I'll do it while we're talking right here, and I'll give you what the name of the YouTube
okay.
video is. Judy, you'll keep on talking, and
okay.
I will find it for you.
And let me give the spelling of your last name. It's Dollar, like a U.S. dollar, and then Height, H-I-T-E, so it's Dollar Height. John and Judy Dollar Height.
Judy's not listed on anything with the government. I'm the only one that is the felon, it looks like. Judy is just my spokesperson.
Well, she's a great spokesperson. You know, you must have really got them mad, Judy, because you seem like a person who is definitely going to dot your I's and cross your T's.
We operate under the law. We have never tried to not report. We reported our income. We contacted USDA when we first started this endeavor. We were on a fact-finding mission asking for information. Our local office, we're water and soil. We don't know anything about that. You'll have to call Colorado Springs. We did talk to them. They tell us we don't need a license. We went a step further and spoke with someone whom we went to church with that dealt in the industry. We got information from him, all which has been accurate.
We also talked to
the Missouri Department
Missouri.
Of Agriculture. They tell us, no, you don't need a license to do that.
Is that what you were going to say, John?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the MOAG says that there is no rules or regulations regarding pet rabbits, fur rabbits, or meat rabbits. Only meat rabbits once you butcher more than 1,000 heads. And so at that point, and there is no rules or regulations, I mean, we've already done all the fact-finding that we thought was necessary.
Right. And of course, the article in the paper today says Dollar Heights won't agree to settlement. Terms of document ridiculous, they say. And what you were talking about earlier was that if, let's say, I wanted to buy your 3-acre piece of land, if you agreed to this settlement and I wanted to raise animals on there, I couldn't. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. If we agreed to the settlement
right,
offer as they've written it, that is correct.
Right, which you're not
you
going to.
You couldn't have a horse. You couldn't
right.
have, correct. All they told us that we could have would be one spayed or neutered cat or dog. which we have neither, by the way, right now, and I don't plan on any. But I don't feel like I should be treated any differently than my neighbor. And they've also stipulated that we would have to permanently disqualify ourselves from ever obtaining a USDA license to do anything. If it's about people becoming in compliance, why would you tell someone they're not allowed to apply for a license? That makes absolutely no sense.
Does Senator McCaskill know about this latest matter?
She does.
Did she say anything, or do you have any idea what she's going to do? She must be fed up with this at this point, right?
My last conversation with her assistant, Corey Dukes, was that she was going to speak with the higher-ups of USDA and see if that they could not get this resolved and get it handled. I have not spoken to him. It's been, I don't know, 4 or 5 days. I haven't heard anything further.
We did receive a letter from Congressman Billy Long. It was a very, very good letter. It was quite scathing of the USDA that he had put in there several points that they had ample time to work with us and try to work this out before it ever even became a violation issue. In the letter, he said that they could have spoke with us and pointed out what needs to be done and been nice and friendly. His letter was very, very good, and that was forwarded to the USDA also.
Let me just read the statement from this spokesperson, Mr. Sachs. He said that, and this was just released a couple of days ago, Mr. Dollarheit did not accept the agency's revised settlement proposal. The Dollarheit case remains under agency review as we evaluate our options for resolving the matter. We typically refer cases to our Office of General Counsel for litigation when we cannot resolve a case through a settlement agreement, but there has been no formal USDA decision at this time in terms of our next course of action. So really, this is just kind of like a boilerplate email that he sent out.
Right.
What about the fine? Where does that fine or settlement, where does that stand right now?
We're not paying it. I don't know where they stand, but we're not paying it.
I'm not paying a dollar. Back in January of 2010, when the APHIS agent was there, if within a couple weeks or so, if they would have written us a traffic ticket for, say, $1,000 or less, we would have probably been compliant. We would have wrote them a check, and we would have been on our own merry way and not raised rabbits and been happy.
He even alluded when we asked him if we completely got out of it, would that satisfy them? And he told us it would look good to the review panel. I said, okay, but they're still going to consider us in violation, correct? And he said, yes. I said, so what are we looking at ballpark for a fine? He said, at the most, $1,000. He said, maybe $100, maybe $250. He said, at the most, $1,000. He did make that statement to us. At 6 to 8 weeks, had they come back with that, we wouldn't have liked it, but we would have paid it. We more than likely would have still gotten out of the rabbits. We would have paid it and gone on. That's not how this went down.
When the federal government came to me and said that it's a $3.9 million fine and they were going to be real nice and generous and say that they would take a settlement offer of $90,643, I've taken the position I'm not paying that. I'm not paying one penny to them. They had their chance. I do not believe that we are within their jurisdiction because the state of Missouri does not require a license. I was at a dog breeders meeting last night with the Department of Agriculture as the keynote speaker, and the dog breeders, they do have to have a Missouri license. However, they do not have to be dually licensed with the USDA. The USDA is optional for the dog breeders. So if Missouri does not require rabbits to be licensed, from my thoughts, if the same rules would apply, it would be an optional for us to be USDA certified. Now, with USDA certification, you are able to sell outside of Missouri. We have never, ever sold any rabbits outside of Missouri. We only sold our rabbits in 3 counties.
Right. They're still asking for the $90,000.
The way we understand it, the $90,000 was up in the very first letter that we did not send up. What was the date, Judy?
I believe it was May 29th, but I would have to go back and look. It was the end of May.
And so the way we looked at it, that is off the table now. That is no longer on the table. What has happened since Sarah Conant had wrote this ridiculous letter wanting us to do a lifetime of not being able to own any animals? We did send back a letter, basically the same information that Claire McCaskill's agreement was, but we did not accept accept their jurisdiction. They had had the letter for about a month, and our attorney had received a phone call from the second in command at the USDA, and she was trying to strong-arm our attorney, trying to get him to say that he would come to us and get us to sign a letter of jurisdiction. And she did throw it out there that if we did sign the jurisdiction letter, that she would reduce from a lifetime down to 5-year penalty of not being able to have any animals for just the 5 years. So our attorney says, well, I will have to talk to Mr. Dollarheit. Says, you will need to get this letter to me with what you're wanting to do. But he says, I will tell you, if you don't have jurisdiction, you don't have jurisdiction. If you do have it, then use it. But he says, if you don't, then you need to leave the Dollarheit alone. About another 5 weeks now has passed, and we have never yet received another letter.
He asked her if he would have it in his email by end of business day, and she stated that she would do that. That will be 5 weeks tomorrow that he received that phone call.
The lawyer that you used, I read in one of the articles that you wanted to find a lawyer who understood the farm business. This is the same lawyer that you've had from the beginning?
It is. And we've also been in consultation with a couple of other attorneys that have given us advice. They have not charged us. They've been helpful. They've also reviewed this attorney's information and given us some advice, which he has taken, and we've gleaned some other legal advice from them. But he is the attorney on record, and he's the one that has written all of the correspondence to the USDA and conversed with them.
Right, and that's probably costing you a little bit of money, right? Unless he's doing it pro bono.
No, he's charged. He's been good to us. He's been fair. Yes, with any attorney, it gets expensive. No one wants to pay attorney fees.
No, of course not.
Yes, it's been a hardship.
Why do you think the USDA is doing this? I'm sure you've had plenty of time to think about this because they've kind of turned your whole life upside down here with this. There's no closure, it seems. What's motivating them to do it? You've never done anything more than a speeding ticket. You're not a terrorist. You're regular Americans with kids. You obey the law. You try to make money. You try to put bread on the table. You try to teach your kids how to do the right thing. Why are they coming after you?
We feel like it's to set a precedence in case law. Not only have the HSUS come down on the dog breeders, the cat breeders, the pet breeders, they're trying to make horses deemed as pets. Slaughter of horses is no longer allowed in Missouri. And in fact, we got a canned response from Roy Blunt's office to our email about the horse slaughter issue. And at first, I took that as you have to be kidding. Well, upon further investigation, if you own a horse in Missouri and anywhere, is my understanding, if you have
a horse slaughter, it's nationwide.
It's nationwide. A horse cannot be butchered regardless. But when you had a nag horse, they used to make glue out of them or a variety of things.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's illegal. And if you have a horse that's down on your property, no longer can you go out and put the horse down with a shotgun and bury the horse or call the dead wagon to come get it and it be disposed of. Now you have to get a vet involved, and it's extremely costly. And a lot of the vets were against this because they say the horse suffers. It doesn't die in a matter of seconds. It takes several minutes. And they jerk, and they twitch, and they suffer. A bullet's instant if you do it right. Besides that issue, the vets say it takes a great amount of chemical to produce the desired effect to kill a horse. And then they require that you bury the horse, which then it goes into the groundwater. Not a real environmentally friendly practice, but that's the way it is now with the horse market. So there's a reason that horses used to be worth something, at least if you didn't ride it or show it or use it in rodeos or in horse racing or whatever. They had some value. They at least could be sold for slaughter. Not so anymore. There are instances, and we've heard about this in our area, where folks are hurting. We're in a drought. There's a lot of folks that don't have feed to care for their animals. They go and take a horse to the auction. It doesn't sell. So here they're out the yardage and what it charged to go through the auction. They go out to their trailer. They might have brought one horse to the auction. There might be three horses in their trailer because guess what? Somebody else brought theirs and it didn't sell and they couldn't afford to take it home. Now what do you do? And that's happening. So what is a person supposed to do when they can't afford to feed them? They can't put them down. There's no horse slaughter any longer. Now you're stuck. And we read an article not too long ago about a donkey or a burro or something that got loose. They contacted the Humane Society. Oh, they didn't have the resources. They couldn't take it. They didn't know what to do with it. Well, what's somebody else supposed to do with it? your options are what? When you've got a horse that's suffering and is old and is unhealthy, they used to do the humane thing and put it down and do the environmentally friendly thing and make glue out of it. That's not allowed anymore.
I'm on YouTube, and the video of the inspection appears that it has been pulled, the actual inspection with the USDA agent. I'm actually seeing every video that has been taken of us, but that particular one has been pulled.
You mean YouTube pulled it?
Probably under the direction of USDA, wouldn't surprise me.
It's your YouTube channel, right?
I'm looking at it right now, yes, and it is gone.
When was the last time you saw it on YouTube?
A couple weeks ago.
Hmm.
Going through all the different videos, and that is not here.
Wow.
The pre-inspection is here.
Judy, what were you saying?
Something else we've discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I've done any searching, looking for cases similar to ours, if I were to find one that had gone to trial, it necessarily didn't say that those that were under fire won. But if the outcome sounded like possibly that they had prevailed, on the USDA website, that comes up as missing and unavailable and a 404 error every single time. But ones that USDA have prosecuted and they've collected a fine, which most of the time is in the neighborhood of $25,000 or higher, that's posted. I find that very curious.
Sounds like this is something that needs further investigation. Do you think Senator McCaskill will go with you all the way on this?
I don't know.
It'd be nice if she would, but it's hard to tell.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the lawmakers are really wanting to really try to take up our case to get too dirty on it.
Right. How has all this changed your view of our government, of our country? Has it changed your view?
It's drastically changed my view.
In what ways?
I used to believe in our justice system. I don't. We've been contacted by another person who had a large rabbitry. She was known nationally as a very, very quality breeder, quality stock.
She has a 17-time grand champion. The House Rabbit Society stole from her premises without a search warrant. They entered her premises and stole 163 of her rabbits. 17-leg grand champion show rabbit that has now been spayed and neutered and has been sold for $25 to somebody. And this lady's case still has not been heard by a judge.
Her name is Debbie Bell. It's out in Colorado. She was a university professor. She's been raising rabbits since around 1980. She was called by a neighbor and said, "Someone's in your barn stealing your rabbits. You need to hurry home." She was met by law enforcement, forced into a patrol car, not allowed into her barn. She had an air-conditioned barn, automatic waterers. They turned off the water, said the rabbits didn't have water. They turned off the swamp cooler. They opened all of the doors, and it was a very hot day, and they stated to her, "Do you know that it's 84 inside?" And she said, "Well, it's 94 outside. You've opened the doors and turned off the swamp cooler. I'm surprised it's not hotter." They did not present her with a search warrant. It was probably 4 to 6 hours after the fact that they had taken her rabbits that they produced the search warrant. She tried for an injunction to stop the spaying and neutering of the animals. A great many of them had already been done. The judge threw it out because at the time that they took the animals, they informed her that there would be a charge of at least $5 to $8 per animal per day up until her hearing, which it was going to be at least 30 days. Well, she did some quick math and realized that was in the neighborhood of $24,000 for 1 month's worth of care. She could not possibly afford that. So they forced her to...
Under duress, she did sign a release.
And the judge stated because that she had signed that, she voluntarily relinquished her rights and he threw it out.
It sounds like these people are from a different planet. That's what I can't figure out. John, has this changed your view of the U.S. government and your country?
Yes, it has. Me and my wife has always thought is the USDA was an educational arm of the United States government for the farmer, to help the farmer make their farm more profitable, to educate and inform of what new technologies are coming down the pike. So when a USDA agent showed up, we were not scared of them. We were, you know, like, "Oh,
right.
Hi, how are you? You know,
right, sure.
What can we do?" Okay, we thought they were here to help.
Right.
We didn't ask for any help. But that's the first thought that came into our mind. The U.S. government here is wanting to help educate and maybe make us more profitable. And then to totally be the other direction where everything that the lady was here for was trying to figure out a way that she could write up a violation. the further that we go along, the more things that we find that are happening, that where the United Nations is getting involved in telling our government what they need to do under the Agenda 21, the more you learn, the more the people that you run across that are being tyrannized by the U.S. government. I keep thinking, I think I read this in my history book, and I think it was something to do like with World War I and World War II, that our great people of our country had went and fought against this type of tyranny in other countries. But the problem is here, and it's here right now. The International Baccalaureate is a kind of plan that Adolf Hitler did for the children, what they called the Hitler's Youth. Right now, the UN is pushing this in our local school districts. We have the Humane Society that are wanting to eliminate all animals. They want to put the animals back to their original state. So that means no dogs that have been crossbred to make another breed. They want it to go back just to the wolves and the coyotes. They want to rewild the America. This Agenda 21 is right on the front page of the United Nations website.
If you read the first paragraph or two, it sounds good. But the further you read and the deeper you go, and I know we sound like crazy. If I had heard myself 2 years ago to now, I would have thought I'd lost it.
Right.
I had never in a million years thought that this is what our country would come to. But Obama has also passed the 2011 Food Modernization Act. Food's now a controlled substance. You cannot grow tomatoes and cucumbers and watermelons and sit on your street corner or go to the farmer's market and sell those. You have to have a USDA license to do so, and they only allow you one. So if you get a license for tomatoes, don't be caught selling watermelons and cucumbers. The fine, first offense, is $400,000. Did you know that's out there?
Yes.
Wow.
There's a story that just came out this week about the EPA has
right.
now made hay a pollutant. Every farmer that is going to bale hay is now going to be committing a violation of this new ruling. The Department of Transportation wants to make all farmers have CDLs to drive their tractors. That means your 14-year-old son or daughter cannot rake hay for you any longer. Now you have to pay a licensed CDL operator to be able to do your hay for you. Everything in the Agenda 21 is a direct attack on the American way, and all of our things that we take for granted is basically going to be illegal.
Right. And you never thought about this stuff before this incident.
If somebody would have said something to me, I would have said, oh, whatever, you know, this is crazy, you're nuts. But now we're finding that a lot of people may think that we're nuts. Now, anybody that thinks we're nuts, we pull up Agenda 21 and say, read it for yourselves, and then people will read it and they'll come back and say, oh my God, this is unreal.
Anything you hear that says sustainable development, that is also Agenda 21. Those are two of the interchangeable terms. And let's hope that Obama does not sign this next year, but my fear is that he will.
I'm confident. I've got the awful feeling in my stomach that Obama is going to go and he's going to sign the Agenda 21, and at that point in time, America is gone. The Agenda 21, it's been out there a long time, and the first warrior has been Sheriff Richard Mack from Tucson, Arizona, that he fought back the Brady Bill. That was
right.
one of the very, very first attacks on the United States on our rights, and that was straight out of the Agenda 21 when it was brought forth to the World Conference, I believe in 1992. Clinton brought that home and put the Brady Bill in, and, you know, this one lone soldier, he went out there and he says, no, U.S. government, you can't take our guns away from us. This is America. You will not take them. And he took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and they did win. And we still have our guns today. So that was one of the very first battle zones of this Agenda 21. And it has been pretty quiet for the last several years. We've been basically being slow-boiled, a little piece here and a little piece there, and everybody seems like everything's okay.
That's right, a death of a thousand cuts.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
A lot of people would agree with exactly what you're saying because the evidence is there to show that that is the case. Obama, of course, was promoted into that office by socialist globalists, and you'll hear people talking about, oh, Obama's a communist. Well, the fact of the matter is that if you trace his beginnings and the individuals and the groups who did support him financially and get him into that position, they are Agenda 21 types. They're globalist types. They want to snuff out nationalism and bring in
right.
the United Nations. This isn't fear-mongering. This isn't anything other than the facts. What this reminds me of, what you're talking about, reminds me of the whole global warming matter. I was completely unaware of that until I read a book, The Global Warming Deception, and talked about the ClimateGate affair where all those emails were released WikiLeaks fashion that showed that they were just creating this whole global warming charade, this facade. In fact, we have been cooling since 1992. So what you're saying is that what's happening to you is part of this whole globalist agenda to pretty much take away any rights we have and have the United Nations come in and do things the way they want to. And it makes sense. How have your friends and neighbors reacted to all this?
Our community has been very supportive. We've had customers walk in our shop and just bear hug me, and I'm so sorry you're going through this. Is there any hope? Is there any end in sight? We're praying for you. We're thinking about you. We're supporting you. Who do I need to write and call?
Right.
And initially, when this first started, and we went to the media, and we started talking on different talk shows and different local outlets, their phone lines were jammed. Their email was jammed. Claire McCaskill's office, he told me, he said, the amount of phone calls has been astronomical.
Wow.
And Roy Blunt's office and Billy Long's office, USDA, both Colorado Springs and out in Maryland, they've received a ton of phone calls. So we've had really good support. Now, of course, there's always going to be one person. There's an animal activist in the Joplin area. She's nuts, and she has made it her mission to make anyone that she can miserable and anyone that will listen. She will write on the Newsleader blog and her propaganda. But for the most part, we have received nothing but support.
That's the only negative person, and we've been contacted from people from shore to shore, from Atlantic to the Pacific, with support. We've got one person
Hawaii,
that is not
Oregon,
supportive.
Arizona, Florida, we've received calls from all over. It's astounding to me, the phone calls that we have received.
Mm.
People are mad. People
yeah.
are sick of being tromped on. But the problem is, a lot of people look at it as, oh, that couldn't possibly be right. No, the government wouldn't find you that. You must have done something. There's got to be more to the story. There's been one or two of those. It's one of those deals, until it happens to you, you
right.
think, how can this be? There's got to be more to the story. Well, it is happening to us, and because of that, we've put out a Facebook page with our story, and because we've been on all of these blogs, people that are in similar circumstances are doing some Googling and some searching, and they've started contacting us, and we've shared stories. It's mind-boggling, the amount of stories. One of our bloggers alerted us, USDA is also targeting the magicians. They will look for a magic show.
Wow.
And they will buy a ticket to the magic show. Almost always, a magician will use a white meat rabbit. They photograph well. They show up well, pulling out of a black hat. They will come in. If that magician pulls the rabbit out of the hat, they will stand up, approach the magician, and say, I'm with USDA. I need to see your USDA license for your rabbit. They don't know what they're talking about. You're interrupting my show. What are you doing? Who are you? What? That is a direct aggression and insubordination of an officer. Here's your fine for that. And here's your fine for not producing a license. By the way, you want to get that rabbit license, I'll be back and checking up with you.
Too bad the magician can't make him disappear.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
wouldn't
there you go. That'd be great. In our business with selling the rabbits, we did sell rabbits to magicians and photographers for Easter, that they would take photographs of the rabbits with the little kids holding them and for their Easter photographs. We were on KY3 television because one time before Easter, back in probably about 2008 or so, the photographer had taken photographs of the news anchor's children, and so she wanted to have us on the air to talk with people about how to care for the animals. So this was not something we were trying to hide in any shape or form. We're out trying to help people when they are picking out a rabbit, just like they would a dog. With rabbits, we're talking a $10 rabbit, where when you get into dogs, they're sometimes several hundred dollars.
Not every family can afford a purebred dog that costs $500, and the vet bills are very expensive. Rabbits are very healthy. They're very quiet. It's a pet that a family can afford to have. It's a very calm, a very quiet pet. A lot of apartment complexes that don't allow dogs, they're never going to know if a rabbit's in the cage somewhere, and that's attractive to a lot of folks. But our message was, don't go out and get a child a rabbit for Easter without discussing with the family, with the child. It's a long-term commitment. Rabbits can live 8-10 years.
Right.
It's a long-term commitment, and that was our message. We talked about the health. We talked about what you do and you don't feed them. We talked about nail care. We talked about those issues. If we had anything to hide, we certainly wouldn't have been on the news.
Yeah, I read that where you said don't feed them lettuce. I read that in one of the articles.
Absolutely not. That is a kiss of death to a young rabbit to do that. We have been in some rabbit barns that were deplorable. We have spoken with some rabbit breeders. They were not the most economically advanced folks. Very poor, many of them not educated. There are quite a bit of them out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think, really, the individual that first came, I think she thought she was going to come and find filthy conditions and some backwoods hick that couldn't think for themselves, is what I really think she was thinking she was going to find. And mm-hmm. when I challenged her and caught her in the fact there are no regulations for cages, she didn't like it. She didn't like that she couldn't take pictures of deplorable conditions because they didn't exist.
Right.
And I really regret that I didn't photograph and videotape that whole episode. Had I known then what I know now, I definitely would have. And that is a message to anyone out there. I don't care what the situation is. If it's a stop for a traffic ticket or whatever it is, you better be recording.
That's right.
Audio and video. I don't care what it is. If they come to your house and they say that your child hit another child and whatever, you better be videotaping to make sure, because it's your word against theirs, and if you don't have it documented,
right.
it makes it really difficult.
Yeah, it does seem like the USDA, in this case, is really overstepping its bounds and really bringing something to the American public that they really don't want to see. How can listeners keep up with your story? Do you have a website for this? Where can they go?
Well, Facebook is where most of our stuff is being done. The Dollar Value Rabbitry webpage is technically there. We do not have any content on it this time. We've got it paid for, I think, for another 5 years. We wanted to get it pulled down so the USDA would look to them that we had stopped our business. So basically it just has information saying Dollar Value Rabbitry went out of business in 2010. We are looking at trying to create something with that webpage to possibly bring in some donations to try to fight back the USDA. We are not actively trying to take donations. We've had a few donations from just locals in our area, but we do have a Facebook page, and under the Facebook page, a little over 200 members on that right now.
USDA Tyranny of the Dollar Hike Family, if anyone wants to go to that page on Facebook.
I'm sure a lot of people will as they're listening to this interview. It's USDA Tyranny of the Dollar Hike Family on Facebook, right?
That's
yes.
correct.
And I'm sure that because of the national interest that's been paid to your case, I'm sure that there are a lot of regular Americans out there who would be happy to fork over a dollar or $5 or $10 or $20 or more to help you if you put together a legal defense fund. So that's probably a good idea because the government obviously can't be reasoned with. Has anybody from the state of Missouri approached you to fight the federal government off? If not, have you thought about approaching somebody?
I contacted the Attorney General's office, and they said, well, we don't defend people, we defend the state. They said, you'll just have to deal with it with your own attorney. So that was the comment that I got out of the Attorney General's office. We did talk to the director of MOAG and the manager of MOAG, and basically they're like, have fun, we know who you are, but you'll just have to deal with this one all on your own.
Right. So the state doesn't have any interest in perhaps defending states' rights against the encroaching federal government. That's what you're saying?
Not at this time.
Nope.
There are two people that are probably going to be running for a political office this next go-round. They have expressed that if this is still going on, if they were to get elected, that they're going to do everything they can to do so. But you never know if they will have a chance to be elected or not. We do know that Roy Blunt has came out against us. Claire McCaskill has been for us. And after a long period of time, Billy Long finally did come out for us. So that's where we are with the political. It doesn't appear that we have anything else going on that's going to help us there other than great people that are listening to your show.
Politics
yeah.
has left a really bad taste in our mouth at this
yeah.
point.
And of course, finally, this whole thing started when you were trying to teach your teenage son about money and business. Do you have any other children?
We do. We have two boys.
And what are their ages?
19 and 11.
And how has this whole thing affected, how has this whole thing affected them at all?
It has.
It's affected them a great deal.
Our youngest child is still in school. You know, he has to deal with when these bogus articles come out in the newspaper. He's had a couple kids make some obnoxious remarks, and he's pretty tough. He said, you don't know the whole story. He said, mind your own business. He said, you don't know the whole truth. But it is difficult. You know, our older son, we started this endeavor with him, and he says he feels guilty. He says, you did this to get me started out in life. And he said, I feel like this is partially my fault. You tell them it's not, and you reassure them, and we have a great amount of faith. We've met some incredible people. Had we not gone through this, that we probably would not have been in contact with. I keep telling myself, God doesn't give you more than you can handle. I have lost half my hair. I had to cut off my hair. I had a full head of hair. I had to cut it almost all off. It's starting to come back. I'm leaning on my faith, but I don't have faith in the federal government. I have faith in God above. And so he's been good to us, and he will sustain us, and that's pretty well where we're at.
Right. John, how about you?
It'd be the same. That's all we can do is just try to comfort our kids and lean on God and our friends. And we are very thankful that of the people that have came out and showed their support.
John and Judy Dollarhite, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. And I know that I'm going to be following this matter closely, and I wish you the best of luck. And I hope that your Facebook page goes viral and you get a lot of donations if, in fact, you do decide to do that and you take on the federal government and you win. Thanks again so much for your time.
Thank you. We appreciate being on.